Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Center for Mediocre Meteorology here at Car Talk Plaza.
This is serious stuff.
Don't pay attention.
Pennsylvania has this stupid little tradition about this punksaholic Phil, the drunken little rodent that comes up on February 2nd and predicts the weather. Well, it's about time someone exposed a little sham for what it actually is, and I'm the one to do it.
Oh, aren't you?
First of all, they say that if this weasel... It is a weasel. Grandfather's a weasel, isn't it?
Sure.
If this weasel doesn't see a shadow, there will be only two more weeks of winter. Come on. I mean, when was the last time winter ended here in New England in the middle of February?
Or Pennsylvania, for that
matter. Or even Pennsylvania. It never ends in February. And here's the other bogus part of the gopher charade. They say that if Punxsutawney Weasel doesn't show his shadow, there will be at least six more weeks of winter. Now, they're predicting that it's going to be cold around here until the middle of March. I mean, duh. I mean, are they climbing out on a limb here or what?
Maybe.
It's always cold here in the middle of March. I mean, it's like predicting that you're going to say something stupid.
Or that you're going to remember last week's puzzler.
Exactly. What was last week's puzzler? Anyway, we have to come up with a better tradition. We need our own meteorological predictor. We're going to do it next year at the beginning of February. We're going to breed some little rodent of some kind. We already have a couple on the staff. And we're going to predict next February 2nd whether winter will last another 10 weeks. Another 16 weeks. Because we know it's going to last 6 weeks. And we know damn well it ain't going to last 2 weeks. Right?
Right. Right.
I was thinking we would have, like, hibernating Bugsy. And when Bugsy comes out of hibernation, which he does all winter, if he sees, like, what would he see? When you come out of hibernation,
he'd see a free lunch.
If he sees a free lunch, that's it. If he sees a free lunch, it's 16 more weeks of winter. That's it. I'm working on it. Where is Bugsy? He's asleep.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Gretchen from Tyler, Texas.
Hi, Gretchen.
Gretchen.
Yes.
Tyler.
Yes. Have you been here?
Where is Tyler?
I went to Tyler the other day. I had two pairs of pants shortened.
It's halfway between Dallas and Shreveport, Louisiana.
I've never been there. No.
Well, it's beautiful. We're famous for our roses and azaleas.
Cool.
Sounds like hay fever and allergies to me.
Well, that's true.
So what's in your mind, Gretchen?
Well, I have a 1996 Nissan Sentra.
Yeah.
And recently, we had a lot of rain here, and a friend of mine had taken my car and had parked it on their lawn.
Mm-hmm.
He got stuck, and maybe you don't know, but in East Texas, we have red clay for earth.
Ah.
And they tried to pull it out with a little truck, and it just sunk deeper. And so I asked one of my students with a huge pickup truck to come help me pull it out. And so we went out there. He hooked up the car. He couldn't get directly behind it, so he was kind of at an angle.
Mm-hmm. I see disaster in the wind here. Right.
Well...
Were there any trees between?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it all.
What happened was the driver had the driver's side window down to get instructions from the many men, by the way, standing around.
All of whom knew everything, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And within a split second, the wheels of this huge pickup truck spun untold sums of mud into the car.
Oh, into the car.
It completely covered my dash.
Down into the vents.
You got the picture.
Yeah.
So, I took it to the dealership.
$400.
Oh, you should be so lucky.
$458 in labor only.
$458. Well, what is there besides labor?
Well, there's little bitty gears, and there's a box, what did he call it? A control box.
Yeah, the heater control box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're little bitty screws and gears and
yeah, but whatever. they can't amount to a hill of
mud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So $500. It'll be $500. I might need a heater motor, but I very much doubt it.
No.
In fact, I would do nothing.
Well, I went to another mechanic.
Ah, there you go.
So he took it, he kept it a day. I went back to pick it up. It was $57.
Woof.
My question is, where does the mud go, and how can it be that it could be $458 or $57? And
yeah, what did he do? Do you know?
I don't know what he did. I trust him so much, I didn't even ask him.
Yeah, what I suspect, by the time you got it to him, the mud had turned to concrete.
Yeah.
And I think he probably used compressed air.
Oh.
And he probably got into those vents and started blowing, and stuff started coming out the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh.
And when stuff stopped coming out, he was done. He looked at his watch and he said, spent 20 minutes on this.
$57. Well, this is interesting. My mind was in a completely different place. If it had been my car, I would have, A, done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But if it had gotten a little bit more troublesome, I'd have played the hose on it. Exactly. I'd have taken the hose and just stuck it in there and filled everything up. And it would sooner or later wash out.
And that's why we don't have any customers anymore.
That's what the guy in the pickup said. Oh, I just hosed my pickup down.
You can't listen to anyone that drives a pickup truck.
That's true.
Right. So I don't have to worry about anything in my dash. There's nothing in there that can be hurt.
No.
It's
not really.
Unlikely.
No.
It's unlikely.
And if it is, you'll find out.
It's not the end of the world.
Okay. If there is, then I'll call back later.
All right. Gretchen, have a wonderful day.
We'll be out you call, but call anyway. See you, Gretchen.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, fellas. This is Albie calling from Westboro.
Albie.
Yes, sir.
Albie.
As in Edward Albie?
Close.
What's it all about, Albie?
What's it all about? Right.
From where? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Where are you from?
From Westboro.
Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Cool. What's up, man?
One of my cars is a Chrysler LeBaron. It's a 1987.
Mm.
And I'm getting ready to sell it to my mother-in-law if I can.
Oh, that'll cement your relationship.
Yeah. But it's my mechanic said it's got one cylinder that's a little weak, and it drives okay on the highway, but around town, you know, it sputters, and if you go in reverse lots of times, it'll die on you.
Uh-huh.
And he said, gee, you know, you want to sell it to the mother-in-law. He said, how mechanical is she? I said, well, she's a cardiovascular person. She's had a heart attack, but she's pretty nimble. So
yeah.
He said, look,
pushing the car is not going to hurt her.
Yeah, and so he said, look, if you knew which cylinder it was that wasn't working right, about once a month, you take the spark plug out and put a new one in, and that should help it a lot.
Oh. Awesome.
Oh, it's that kind of bad cylinder.
Yeah.
When you do put a new plug in, does it run well?
Well, I haven't tried it yet.
Oh.
I figured I'd call you guys.
When he said it had one bad cylinder, did he go on to describe the badness in any way?
Well, he said, look, you can drive this a long time. It's a little weak, he said.
I think he's nuts.
Really?
Well, I don't know if he's nuts or not. I mean, it may have a bad valve guide, and maybe the valve is burned out a little bit for a different reason, but it's sucking in oil. We know that. And fixing this is going to require either removing the cylinder head or removing the cylinder head and removing the pistons. So it's clearly something that's never going to get fixed.
It's never going to get fixed. That's right. And if it really was simply a matter of a bad spark plug, it wouldn't. I don't think he would refer to it as weak.
Yeah.
I think he means it's got a burned valve and the compression is low. And in which case, replacing the spark plug isn't going to do anything unless, as my brother says, it's got two different problems in that cylinder. But I would certainly try that because, I mean, if nothing else, you could put it in the contract that you'll sell her the car and once a month you'll go to the house and change the plug for her.
Yeah, but she lives in Florida.
Even better.
Better, yes.
Once a month
in the winter.
November, December.
Yeah, but no, maybe I'll buy her one of those little wrenches, foam inside of it.
All of this is moot, Albie. It's all moot because I just realized she will never take possession of this car.
No.
You are never going to make it from Westboro to Florida with this car airlift it.
You could put it on the boat train.
Well, she's going to come up and visit me. Maybe I make the deal then and say,
get
a one-way ticket, Grandma, and here's the car. I mean, I'd actually like to sell her my 89 Grand Voyager, but I'm not that vicious a person.
Yeah, I mean, I would at least check out the theory about that this guy has, that replacing the spark plug does improve things.
Yeah.
And if it does, then I'd say you would have no qualms about selling it to her.
If it doesn't work, I'll knock the price down $200.
We hesitate to ask.
From what?
I was going to ask her $1,000 for it.
$1,000?
Yeah, well, no, that's good. That's a
this
very
is your
good...
mother-in-law?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think this is a very clever attempt at making sure she never talks to you again.
Yeah, in which case, good luck.
Okay.
See you, Albie.
See you, Albie.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Brenda from Westport, Connecticut.
Brenda, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. I have a 95 Volvo 850, thanks to you guys.
Yeah.
I love it.
Did we send it to you? Aren't we sweet?
The only problem I have with it is that my daughter, who's just learning how to drive, thinks she can already drive because she knows how to steer a horse.
Uh-huh.
Well, she might. How old is she?
She just turned 16.
Yeah, is this a stick 850 or an automatic?
An automatic.
Yeah.
An automatic.
Yeah, so steering is about the only thing you have to get used to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, does she know the essential command with G, haw, and whoa?
G, haw, and giddy up.
Giddy up.
Well, actually, now, the problem I'm having is, this morning I did something very stupid. I went out, I rushed out, got into my car, I put my seatbelt on, started to go, and realized it was colder out than I thought. So I zipped up my jacket. Then when I went to get out of the car, I realized I had...
Zipped the seatbelt.
Yes.
I did that the other day myself. Isn't that embarrassing?
Explain to me what it...
She zipped her jacket up over the seatbelt, so the seatbelt is inside her jacket.
Yeah, so?
So you can't get out of the car anymore. You have to stay in the car forever.
By the time I got my jacket unzipped to get to my seatbelt, I thought, if I had a fire in the car, I would be dead. I would be long gone. And then I remembered one of your recent shows. You were talking about putting a fire extinguisher in the car.
Yes.
Where in the car should you put it?
Mine is in the trunk, usually.
Yeah, mine is in the trunk, in a box, underneath a bunch of other stuff.
No, I've seen a lot of... It's a sad statement, but I don't practice what I preach. I've mentioned to a lot of people that they should have fire extinguishers, especially after we've worked on their car's electrical systems.
It should be part of the deal.
Here's your bill. It's complimentary fire extinguisher.
In case it doesn't work, don't blame us.
You can get a small one that you could actually have mounted to the side of the console.
Uh-huh.
You know, on the passenger side, of course. Or on the kick panel. That is the piece that would be opposite the passenger's right ankle, so that you could reach it if you had to.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. I mean, do you think this is going to be a commonplace occurrence that you lock yourself in like this?
Well, no, but it is a good idea to have a fire extinguisher in the car.
It is. It is, yeah. It's better, however, to be able to get out of the car. Right.
That's good, too, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Do you think you'll be doing this often?
No, I don't think I'll ever zip up my jacket again.
So it means that you put the seatbelt on.
Yeah.
And then you zip up your jacket.
Yeah. And this is the complicated
I'm confused
kind of
here. How did...
It's a short jacket, man.
It's a short jacket.
Short jacket. You got the seatbelt on.
Well, the seatbelt's on. You zip up the jacket. Yeah, but where does the shoulder strap go? Oh, it's inside. Part of it's over the jacket.
Right.
And part of it's inside.
But the zipper won't pass it.
No, it won't go all the way up.
I mean, didn't you know when you were trying to zip all the way up that you had somehow gotten the seatbelt where it shouldn't be? You didn't care.
I had no idea. I had pulled my jacket out far enough that... No, I had no idea.
I understand because I did the very same thing. And I got out of the car to go into the laundry to pick up my shirts and... I was trapped.
Did you feel like a complete idiot?
Of course. Everyone is looking out the windows and take a look at this jerk trying to get out of the car. And I kept, what the heck? Because for a while, you don't know what is actually going on.
That is pretty bad. Not as bad as our friend Gladys Mazzari, who, after a day of shopping at the mall, went to her car and got in the back seat. And actually sat there for about a minute or so to look around to make sure no one was watching or had noticed. And then stealthily removed herself. She thought jumping, crawling over to the front wasn't the right thing to do.
That's bad, yeah.
That's worse than my stopping at a blinking red light and waiting for it to turn green.
Oh, I've done that too. If you catch it at the right time, you can stay there all day. You look down, you look up, you look down, you look up. Well, anyway,
good luck, Brenda.
Get an extinguisher. Make sure you get the right kind.
Yes.
I don't know what classification.
What is that?
Well, the kind that's used on
ABC.
Yeah, ABC or whatever. Okay. I don't know. They're all rated for electrical, gasoline. You know, you have to read the label.
Okay.
I don't know what they are, but you should have one and put it in some place where you can get at it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You want the kind that's good for electrical fires, because if it's a gasoline fire, you just run like hell.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing you're not going to do anything about a gasoline fire.
The ones that are good for electrical are good for gasoline, too.
Okay.
You want one that doesn't use water, I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's basically about it.
All right. I'll find one.
Good luck, Brenda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I have sort of a built-in one. My radiator leaks. A little squirt comes.
All right, Tommy. Do you remember anything about last week's puzzler?
Does it have to do with Bedouins from Paterson, New Jersey?
No, it has to do with a Bedouin and his boat. And I'll have the answer in just a minute. Stay tuned.
And even though the NPR mail ladies sprinkle a little more powdered laxative on our Valentine's Day candies whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a teacher with a class of really rotten students you want to punish.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
What was the puzzler?
Well, this came across my desk recently, I think 1994. And I don't know if it's true or not, but as I mentioned last week, it's never stopped me in the past. And this came from someone named Dale, and I can only assume that Dale is a Bedouin. Dale says, I used to work at a marina where we stored and launched boats with a crane. We had a repair shop with about five mechanics, a parts department, you know, all that stuff, and new and used boat sales department. And as such, I'm sure they had a lot of auto mechanics hanging around the place. One day, a customer with an inboard powered boat used it for water skiing and left it at the dock overnight. And he came in to use it the next morning, and the battery was dead because he'd left the lights on. So the head mechanic pulls out the battery and takes it to the shop for a quick charge. I mean, you don't bring the mountain to Muhammad, you know, in this case. You bring the battery in.
Okay? Yeah.
A while later, they take the battery back to the boat. They put it in and try to start it. The starter spins up. You know, you can hear the motor turn, but it doesn't engage the flywheel.
Mm.
Okay? It started fine several times yesterday, the owner of the boat says. So they pull the starter off, thinking it's no good, and they, bring the starter inside, and they put it on the bench, and they test it. And every time they hit it with the 12 volts, it works perfectly. The little gear jumps out, and it would engage.
Spins like crazy.
Spins like crazy. So they put it back in the boat, and again, it spins up but doesn't engage the flywheel.
Hmm.
A while later, they figured out what was wrong, and they fixed it. And there was nothing wrong with the engine. There was nothing wrong with the starter motor. And I guess I lied a little bit when I said there was nothing wrong with them.
I think so.
You think that was a lie?
You could call it a mistake.
I could, huh?
You could. And you could even explain away. You could.
How would I do that?
You could prove that there really was nothing wrong with the battery.
The battery wasn't faulty. How is
that? The battery wasn't faulty.
Okay, so there was nothing wrong with the engine. The starter motor was okay, and the battery was not faulty.
No. The battery was the problem, but there was nothing wrong with it.
And the question was, what was the problem? I've never done this before, but I understand it's possible when hooking up the battery charger. If you remember, they took the battery from the boat and brought it into the shop.
Mm.
And they hooked up the charger to the battery, which was completely stone dead, obviously, because he left the lights on overnight. And when they hooked it up, instead of hooking the red connector to positive and the black connector to negative, they reversed them.
Yeah.
And evidently, the battery will take the charge in reverse. And when they installed it in the boat and hooked the wires up correctly, it made the starter turn backwards. And when that happens, the little gear won't pop out and engage the flywheel. Do we have a winner this week?
The winner is Richard Nielsen from St. Paul, Minnesota, and for having his correct answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got. Richie Boy is going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk store on our website. With this $25 gift certificate, he can purchase anything, or at least any cheap thing, from the Car Talk line of fine apparel and audio products.
Well, anyway, look, we're going to have a brand new puzzler coming up. This is a doozy.
Yeah?
Well, in fact, it may turn out to be a two-part puzzler, and I'll explain why.
Stretch it into 2 weeks?
Well, because it may require that. Anyway, we'll have that coming up in the third half of the show, so stick around. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK, which is also 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
My name is Donna Dubuque. I'm calling from Heartland, Vermont.
Donna.
I'm calling about my car, which is a 1992 Volvo 240, red in color.
Red.
I want to make sure you have the visual image.
I've got it. The whole picture. Yes, we have
it. And her name is Virginia.
Wait, is it a wagon or a sedan?
It's a sedan.
Okay. Red sedan. I have to get the... I got it. I see it now.
And she is outdoors, and she is freezing up a lot this winter.
Yes.
And primarily what I'm interested in is bouncing some advice off of you that my husband received the last time she froze up.
Your husband received this advice?
Yes.
And you want to find out if it's completely bogus.
Right.
From whom did he receive the advice?
We don't want to know. Don't tell us. Just tell us what the advice was. And we'll tell you the source.
All right, we'll tell you who told him. Well, go ahead. We'll do that.
The advice was that he should leave the car running like a half an hour or 15 minutes at night when it's cold, to make sure that the battery recharges itself, and to do this even if we had been out driving the car.
Oh, so I understand. So when you pull into the driveway at night,
right,
you leave the car running, you go into the house. If you remember, you come out 15 minutes later,
okay,
and you,
that's the point.
And you shut it off. Now I know where the advice came from.
This is where it gets interesting. You see, my husband has a tendency to forget things, keys, wallet, glasses.
So he's left it running a few nights, huh?
And, you know, I get up one morning, you know, I open the shade, look at the, you know, thermometer, it's like 18 below or something disgusting, and I see exhaust coming out of the tailpipe, and there's a mound of ice underneath it in the shape of a volcano about 4 inches high and 8 inches across.
No kidding!
And I scream at my husband.
Yeah. What were the exact words you used?
So given, you know, the possible drawbacks of this technique.
Okay. So I got the picture. It gets to be 18 below, and frequently during the winter you've gone in to start the car and it wouldn't start because the battery didn't have enough oomph to get it to go.
Yeah, and this is a problem because it's a new battery.
Right.
I mean, the first time she froze up this winter, we got a new battery in her.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell do you want? You're living up there within the Arctic Circle. Of course it's too cold.
Okay, this is a critical point.
Yeah.
And you would think that with a name like Virginia, maybe she just wants out of here.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah, should have named her Nanook.
I mean, well, we bought her in Virginia, so she moved up here from Virginia.
Oh.
And I think she's rebelling. And I don't know if Prozac is...
Yeah, see, if you buy a car down in the warm climes, then those cars don't come with the cold weather package.
That's true.
Yeah.
The Bronco Nagurski, like, Long Johns and all that.
But she's been up here for a year, so all her fluids are changed and everything. It's not like she's got southern, you know.
The blood hasn't thickened up yet.
First of all,
does it do any good? Let's start from that side. Does it do any good to sit there for 15 minutes or let it sit there for 15 minutes with the engine idling?
The answer is no.
Absolutely not. If you've been driving, which obviously you have because you got home now, then that battery is as charged up as it's going to get, probably.
Maybe. I mean, whoever suggested this, I'm sorry, when your father suggested this.
No, it wasn't my father.
This sounds nice like the kind of advice you'd get from a father. No, I mean, it certainly, to tell you the truth, it doesn't do a whole lot of harm to leave it running all night, although it does waste gas and
a whole tank.
No, what, a whole tank? No.
It was just about dry, and I don't know, it was about three quarters, I think. It ran from 9:30 p.m. to 8 a.m.
But it was nice and toasty when you get in it, doesn't it?
You know, yeah, it was nice and warm, and nobody saw it.
And the neighbors must have said, Donna and, what's your husband's name?
Jim.
Donna and Jim must really know something here. They got something going.
Well, I'm just glad that no one drove away.
Well, you're lucky. I mean, you know what you need, Ashley? You need a block heater.
I know.
You know that.
Yeah.
Well,
in fact,
you plug in the car.
You plug in the car. Your friendly Volvo dealer can install one for you, and you would get a you live someplace where you have access to electricity? You have electricity up there in Heartland, Vermont.
We do have some. It's
DC,
you know,
or AC?
You just have to kind of run an extension cord up to Quebec, and that's, you know, plug it in up there. They get hydropower, I guess. See, one of the other times that the car froze up, my husband went out to try to jumpstart it himself, and he pulled the latch, you know, for the hood release, which is, like, you know, underneath.
Yeah,
and it shattered.
The coil, I guess, so frigid from the temperatures, broke.
Oh, yeah. No, things do get do shrink and get frozen and get brittle.
And then we call the tow truck, and the tow truck guy comes, and he says, you know, like a Vermonter, you know, well, there's nothing I can do with that. And he left.
That's going to go over big with the locals, Tom.
So now...
Is there any chance of the two of you escaping from this frozen tundra? I mean, it's only telling you that this is no place for humans to habitate.
We just moved here, and...
Why?
He wanted to. He's from Vermont.
Oh, geez.
He actually made me promise not to rag on Vermont, and I'm only authorized to humiliate him.
Well, you should get a block heater with a timer, because if you ran that all night, it would cost you as much as a full tank of gasoline.
Well, that's what I understand. They use a lot of electricity.
Yeah, you'd be better off leaving it on, leaving the engine running.
Okay.
If you get a timer that can take the 1,500 watts or whatever that thing draws, you can turn it on at 5 o'clock in the morning. That'll warm the engine up enough so that it'll think that it's 30 degrees out.
Go for it, Donna, and get him out of there. Good God, what does he need? What more does he need?
Good luck.
Okay.
All right, call us next winter.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Before you confuse another poor unsuspecting caller, would you mind if I dip into the old mailbag? I haven't...
What do you mean, unsuspecting caller? They call us! They know what they're getting into.
This falls in the category of wackos. And the wacko is Al. Al. That's
Al, from cyberspace?
Al, from cyberspace. Some time ago, I began to work on the idea of a comic book hero called Captain Destructo. He was a sports car aficionado who gets his vintage MG creamed by a little old lady, an Oldsmobile. Over the twisted wreckage of his post-war MG TD, he swears an oath of vengeance against bad drivers. Wow. That night, sitting in a cafe, he sobs to his French mechanic, who happens to also be in the bistro. Isn't this a good story? She's gone. She's really gone. Forget her, monsieur, she was not with it, says his French mechanic. As the vision of his MG blurs beneath his tears, he asks Berry, who's his French mechanic, Berry, what car out of all the cars around would be indestructible? Indestructible? Like how, monsieur? He asks, in a way that I can exhort my revenge on these tinny pieces of Japanese and Mexican boredom. What car, Berry? What car? The ultimate destructo machine, they decided, was the Hudson Hornet. The comic book never made it out of the garage because I don't wish to advocate road rage, but it had a few interesting subplots, like Captain Destructo following rude drivers to their final destination and putting a note under the windshield that says, "My mechanic has entered a fatal flaw in your car's fuel mixture adjusting module. This is because you cut off that little old lady with the blue hair on the parkway this afternoon. I will be watching you to make sure your rude driving habits change." Signed, Captain Destructo. Now, what's with Al? Is he Gonzo or what?
Yeah.
I like it, though. He's got a nice little thing going.
The reason that Al doesn't have an address is because where Al is...
There
really are no addresses. But it does make for interesting reading.
I liked it.
You remember, my brother sits around all day doing nothing but reading stuff
That's it. That's what I do.
So if you measure up to at least this standard, you can mail him something at Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238. Or if you can't get to the postage meter because someone else in the office is hoarding it, you can always email us at cartalk.com. Now, if you'd rather use the phone and insult us personally, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Roger from Akron, Ohio.
Hi, Roger.
How you doing?
Great. I think I've got an interesting problem for you. And
lay it on us, Rog.
It's a 94 Toyota Tercel. The problem is that in the first week or so after an oil change, and not every one, every third or fourth one, for no apparent reason, when I'm driving along, out of the tailpipe comes a cloud of thick, clingy, dirty white smoke. It could only be described as biblical in proportion.
Wow.
Really?
Now, when this has happened, how long had you been driving?
Sometimes it's initial, but for the most part, it's as the car is fully warmed up.
Car is fully warmed up?
Yeah.
So you've been driving for 15, 20 minutes?
Sure.
And is there anything unusual? I'm sorry, did I interrupt?
No.
Is there anything unusual that has happened in terms of where you have driven or how you have driven that precedes this incident? In other words, have you just finished climbing a hill?
No, it can be.
Descending a hill, making a sharp turn?
Nothing like that.
Had it been parked for an extraordinarily long period of time before this?
No, it can be at high speeds or slow. It's only in the first week or so after an oil change, but not every oil change.
Right.
Taking the foot off the gas will interrupt it.
Well, I know why it's happening.
Well,
I don't know exactly how it's happening, but I know why.
Okay.
Would you like at least that part of the puzzle?
I would.
You would, huh?
Well,
all right. Here's what's happening.
Let me ask him one question, which is going to help you.
Okay.
I don't need any help.
Well, it might help you to get to the next step.
Oh, I wasn't hope. I was.
You weren't going to try to get to the next step.
No,
all
really.
Right, then go ahead. I'll wait.
No, go ahead. Ask the question.
No, my question was, do you always have the oil changed at the same place?
The dealer, right.
At the dealer.
Well, okay, he hasn't changed at the same place,
but
probably
not necessarily the same
a
person.
A different kid every time.
Well,
and what's
I'd
happening,
say one time out of three or four, it's a kid.
It's the same kid.
Yeah.
One time out of three or four, it's the same kid who is overfilling the crankcase.
Exactly.
Really?
I believe so, because what's happening is you are burning crankcase oil.
Uh-huh.
Somehow or another, that oil, that overfilled amount of oil is getting into the crankcase ventilation system and getting sucked into the intake manifold, where it is getting distributed among the four cylinders. And that's the only thing that would account for a cloud of smoke.
Of that proportion.
Right. This density.
And I am not exaggerating on that.
Okay. Oh, I'm sure. I think it's great.
I'm sure it is. And you can, in fact, reproduce. It doesn't take very much oil to do this. You can actually reproduce this by taking a... with the engine running, removing the air cleaner, and with an atomizer filled with oil, you can squirt some oil into where the air cleaner sucks the air into the engine, and you will get the same cloud, the same color and everything.
I guess the guy at the dealership, every time I get that kid, he just like keeps pouring until it runs out.
Maybe the thing's supposed to take 3 2/3 quarts of oil, and he's putting in 4. Or maybe he isn't letting it drain long enough.
Yeah.
So he's not getting all of the old oil out.
Now, that sounds likely.
You check the oil level after an oil change and make sure it is not overfilled.
Okay.
And have your mechanic also check the operation of the PCV system.
Okay, so is there any related damage I should be concerned about?
No.
Okay.
No, the engine is just as happy, almost just as happy to burn motor oil as it is whale blubber. See you, Roger.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, in just a minute, we will unveil this week's brand new puzzler.
Ooh, unveil. It's exciting. I can hardly wait. It's like a bride.
Yeah, like the Bride of Frankenstein. We'll be back in a minute.
Nothing like the way it feels. Nothing like the way it feels to try.
And even though Italian-Americans line up to change their last names to Wilcox whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yes!
Yeah. And this is, actually, this is from, there are many series to which this Puzzler could belong. It could belong.
Not the flooded bridge. Out series, whatever they call it. Rising water.
No, but this could belong to the light switch series.
Yeah.
It could belong to the prisoner series. We've had many prisoner puzzles.
Oh, we've had prisoner puzzles.
Well, here it is. And I'll read it to you as I got it from my pal, Stan Zadonik, who teaches at Brown, and it was given to him by a colleague who failed to provide him with the answer, maybe because he didn't know it.
Hmm.
And here it is. This puzzle has been making the rounds of Hungarian mathematicians' parties. The warden meets with the 23 prisoners when they arrive. He tells them, "You may meet together today and plan a strategy, but after today, you will be in isolated cells and have no communication with one another whatsoever. There is in this prison a switch room, which contains two light switches labeled A and B, each of which can be in either the on or the off position. I am not telling you their present positions. The switches are not connected to anything. After today, from time to time, whenever I feel so inclined, I will select one prisoner at random and escort him to the switch room. This prisoner will select one of the two switches and reverse its position. He must move one, but only one of the switches. He can't move both, but he can't move none either. He must move one. And then he'll be led back to his cell. No one else will enter the switch room until I lead the next prisoner there. And he'll be instructed to do the same thing, move one of the switches either on or off. I'm going to choose prisoners at random. I may choose the same guy three times in a row, or I may jump around and come back. You know, that's what random means.
Yeah.
But given enough time, everyone will eventually visit the switch room as many times as everyone else. At any time, any one of you may declare to me, we have all visited the switch room. If it is true, that is, each of the 23 prisoners has visited the switch room at least once, then you will all be set free. If it is false, and that is that somebody has not yet visited the switch room, you will be fed to the alligators. So the question is, what is the strategy the prisoners devise today?
Yeah. Now, are these prisoners all PhDs in mathematics who just went astray?
Well, don't forget, you only need one smart one.
You only need one smart one, right.
You only need one smart one to come up with the strategy, and everyone else will do what he or she is supposed to do.
Wow, this is a wonderful puzzler.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard. Or on the back of a $21 bill, we've escalated that, and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square,
Cambridge,
our fair city, Matt 02238, or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But right now, if you have a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is John from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Chapel Hill, what do you teach?
Well, not a whole heck of a lot, unfortunately. I'm still learning.
You're still learning?
Aren't we all?
Yeah, I guess so.
Great.
Well, I've got a very strange thing that happens to a van that some friends of mine and myself own.
Well, you've called two very strange guys, so we'll be able to figure it out, I hope.
What kind of van is it?
It's a Dodge van. It's a 1992. And the problem is very strange, and you probably won't believe it, but it has to do with the radio. When you drive down the road at a fast speed, like, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour, and listen to the radio at a, you know, moderate to loud volume, if you roll down the windows, you would expect for you to be able to hear the music less, I would imagine, right? Because of the air and the sound of the wind coming in.
Right, right.
But the exact opposite happens. You roll down the window, and the stereo turns itself practically all the way up and gets really loud. I wouldn't say all the way up, but it gets really loud, like much louder than it was. And you roll it back down, and the sound goes back down. Figure that out.
Does it have power windows?
No, regular windows. It's a totally, you know, cheap sort of AM/FM radio. Doesn't
well, you don't have to open all the windows. If you just crack a window open, it'll do the same thing?
If you roll it down about an inch.
About an
the
inch.
The only windows that you can actually open are the driver's side and the passenger side. The other windows are permanent.
And it does this with either window?
Either window. And what's really strange, though, if you roll down the window, the speakers are in the doors.
Right, I know that.
If you roll down one of the windows and you stick your hand in front of the speaker grill, you can feel wind coming through.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, exactly. And that's exactly what's happening.
But see, here's what else is weird. If you roll down the passenger's window, you can still put your hand in front of the driver's side speaker, and you still feel air being drawn through.
Oh, I just spilled my coffee on my lap. No, what's happening, I believe, is that when the windows are closed...
Huh?
Let me think this out. I don't usually do this with most of my responses. I'm going to try to...
I've got it, too. I think I've got it.
Right. When the windows are closed, you have a system that's kind of airtight, at least as airtight as it can possibly get.
Right.
And somehow that is inhibiting the motion of the speakers.
Right. I mean, the speakers, obviously, the way they make sound is by vibrating.
And they transmit that sound through the air.
Right.
And somehow or another, when you're opening a window... You're depressurizing the cabin. I like that. It sounds good.
You
anyway.
Are. No, you definitely are, because when you crack a window, you are causing a Venturi effect, right? The air blowing by the outside of the window drops the pressure just outside the window, and it sucks the air out of the cab. Everyone knows that happens.
And that sucks the sound along. So the guys behind you can hear your stereo, too.
I always wondered why nobody would, you know, get very close to listen back. And
but,
that's why.
I mean, this theory actually sounds very, very good. My only question, I hate to throw cold water on the theory because I love it, is why doesn't this happen to every vehicle that has speakers
exactly.
in the doors?
I mean, I have a car, you know, of a Honda with a loud stereo in it, and
sure.
It doesn't do that.
Well, it must have to do with the peculiar aerodynamics of this large, cavernous vehicle.
Right.
There's some,
right.
Not aerodynamics, but acoustics. There's some strange phenomenon going on. I'm sure.
Wow.
Let me explain what happens, how the show works, John. You may not know this, but every week we get questions, as you know.
Right.
And we don't know
and
the
we
answers.
And we answer probably somewhere between 4 and 5% of them correctly, which comes out to about a sixth of a call per week. And usually the ones we bumble and stumble through, we get letters about, many letters.
Saying, you dummies, don't you know that? And
during
we get, someone gives us the
weeks.
Answer.
And
right.
then that's how we get educated.
And if we hear anything more, which I'm sure we will, we'll let you know.
We'll have it on CNN tomorrow night. Thanks,
right.
John. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks
bye-bye.
A lot.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Beth Goulart in State College, Pennsylvania.
Beth?
Yes.
Hi, Beth.
From where?
From State College, Pennsylvania.
State College?
Yeah, I'm at Penn State.
Are you a student or a faculty member or
nope,
a staff
I'm a student.
A student. What are you studying?
I'm studying geography and French.
Geography and French.
Right.
How did you happen upon these two useless?
Well, do you want the truth or do you want the easy answer?
No,
we want the truth.
We want the absolute truth.
Yeah.
Absolute truth. Well, I like to speak French, and I want to know how to find all the places in the world where they speak French.
Ah, that's it. And once you've done this, so that took you like 2 weeks. Now what are you doing?
Well, I'm going to finish first.
You're going to finish first, and then you're going off. You're packing your bags.
She's
going
to work for the government.
No.
She's going to go into the...
No, I cannot. Now I have to go save the world and, you know, solve all of our environmental problems.
Oh, really?
Using my French-speaking abilities.
Really?
Your French, yeah, well, that's going to go a long way.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui.
Are you going to, like, bring soap to France?
No, that's one of the more charming aspects of their culture. I think we wouldn't want to ruin it.
You call it charming.
Yeah, okay. Oh, very.
I'm sure they call it charming also.
They probably call it charmant.
So what can we do for you today?
Okay, I'll try to give you the condensed version of what happened.
Yeah.
I drive my boyfriend's Mustang a lot. It's
how
like
old?
A 93 or 94.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was driving home, and it was right after one of these ice storms that we
had.
Oh,
great.
So the roads were pretty, they were all right, but I was in a construction area, and it was a single lane, and it was walled off by those low walls.
Oh, Jersey barriers, they're called.
Oh, yeah. I always called them cattle chutes.
Yeah.
The
concrete things.
Yeah, the concrete slabs. Right.
Yeah.
So there was a fender bender ahead of me. And I had to brake. I was going really slowly, but sure enough, it was a real icy area. So as soon as I braked, I lost control, hit one of those walls, and came to a stop, and then I got rear-ended.
Uh-huh.
So, now, it was amazing. We got out of the cars, and you could hardly even tell on the car I was driving. There was hardly even a scratch on the bumper, and actually, there was hardly even a scratch where I'd hit the wall either.
And you were alone?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, it was kind of scary, but everything was fine. A couple of weeks later, we've got everything settled, and where my boyfriend lives, they had never cleared out his parking lot, so it was like an ice skating rink. So his friends always had to push his car out of the ice skating rink to get it onto the road. And they're pushing him out one day, and one of them commented that only one of his rear wheels was spinning when they were pushing it. And so he came to me and said,
"What did you do to my car?
You broke my car. Yeah. It's dead. You broke it. Only one of the rear wheels is spinning."
Bummer.
And my response was that didn't seem very logical because I couldn't imagine that in a rear-wheel drive vehicle you wouldn't notice something like that when you were driving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like because it was handling just fine.
Did this cause a big row? I mean, did you have a big fight with your boyfriend over this?
Well, we won't talk about that.
Well, we have to.
Probably
that's
listening.
More important than the answer.
But I mean,
no, we didn't have a fight about it.
I mean, he just came right out and accused you. He didn't ask, did you do something to my car? He said, you wrecked my car.
Yeah, he kind of did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He comes right down to it. I guess I have to admit that. Sorry, hon.
Yeah. I don't want to give away anything here, but I think from now on, can we refer to him as your ex-boyfriend?
If you must. Well, but you haven't heard all of it yet because he
doesn't. It hardly matters.
No, we want to hear everything.
We do.
So he tests this theory. His parents have a gravel driveway, and he's noticed in the past that when he, you know, peels out of the driveway really fast, he leaves two little divots. So he got in the car and peeled out of the driveway, and he only left one little divot.
Uh huh.
With his car.
So clearly. Yes.
So clearly, this is evidence to
you have prevented
that
one of his wheels
car.
From turning.
Right.
And of course, now that only one wheel turns, the car is practically undrivable, right?
Well, that would be what you think, but you know,
but
I haven't noticed any difference.
It hasn't affected it.
No, it hasn't affected it at all.
Interesting.
So I started talking to some people. I have a lot of engineers in my family, and
good.
I used to live with one. They're mechanical engineers. My boyfriend's a civil engineer, so it's different. And they've been saying that most cars are supposed to do that. Differential something or other?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. Only one wheel. Under extreme circumstances, when the traction is very different between one wheel and the other rear wheel.
Like if one of the wheels is on ice
and the other one isn't, then in fact the wheel that's on the ice will spin. And of course the wheel that's not on the ice wouldn't spin because what? The car would move.
Right, but the car wasn't moving.
No, the car won't. When you have a wheel on ice and another one on dry pavement,
all the power goes to the wheel with the least resistance, which is the one where the ice is. And so one wheel spins and the other one doesn't go at all, and that's why you're stuck.
Now, to answer your question about why his car leaves two divots in the gravel driveway,
right.
And now he left only one.
Right.
Yeah, but if he did that test over and over again, he'd find out that more often than not, If the conditions are the same for both rear wheels, then the power gets distributed evenly to the two rear wheels, so that he's more likely to leave two divots. But if there's one that's a little bit slippery than the other, then he will leave one divot only.
Okay.
So it's behaving exactly the way it should be. You didn't break anything, but I think
that's
you should
right.
break his nose.
Well, and do you think that he's going to be convinced that you said this? Because he wants the mechanic to look at it right now, and we can't afford that.
No,
let him have anybody he wants look at it, because it won't be any business of yours, because he is your ex-boyfriend. And what do you care what he does?
And you don't,
he can
you don't
go jump
be...
off a cliff if he wants to.
Listen, you are embarking on a career in geography and French. Do you want to be stuck with a bridge builder? Or, no, worse than that, a road builder.
You guys are mean.
A road paver. That's probably
this guy's going to be driving one of those asphalt trucks. Dump him.
Yeah, dump him now before it gets too serious.
Well, it's been a while. I think it's already pretty serious.
Sunk cost.
He lets me take his car out of town.
I mean, who is he to turn around and yell at you for breaking his car without even questioning it? Now he thinks he knows it all.
He doesn't know anything.
He's sort of like my brother.
He's a grad student?
No, he's an undergrad. We're both undergrad.
Undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Tell him to take a couple of mechanical engineering courses.
Okay.
And he'll find out about the differential, and he'll come back to you.
And he'll apologize.
And apologize profusely.
Yeah, and then can I take him back?
Yes.
Yeah, but if he doesn't apologize...
Dump him.
Okay.
Trust us on this.
Yeah.
All right.
We don't know much.
But we do know this.
No, I didn't say that. I just said
we
don't know much.
We know about cars and about relationships.
We know about cars and we know about exes.
Okay.
See you, Beth.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've vaporized yet another hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Fraublucher-Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman-Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from his lackluster performance at the Walla Walla Curry Lentil Loaf-Off, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge in Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our document security expert from the island of Jamaica is Euripides Upman, who is not related to our tailor, Euripides Imenides, or to our staff bouncer, Euripides I Break Your Face, or to the proprietor of our men's clothing shop, Euripides Euonides. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian, all been heard before. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Audovindo. Our director of Pavlovian research is Isabel Ringing. Our Shakespearean waiter is Coffee Anon. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. The banker at the Car Talk Poker Games is Nikolai Putin. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. We're going to need bigger offices, man. The staff is expanding at a geometric rate.
Isabel Ringing.
Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the snow-shoeing meter maids in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1406, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, where every week you can read the latest Dear Tom and Ray column.
Do we write that?
No, just the answers, not the questions.
You know, it'd be more efficient if we just went ahead and did both.
Well, yeah, but then it wouldn't be a weekly column. It'd be like an autobiography.
Good point.
That's Dear Tom and Ray, questions and answers about cars, on the homepage now at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR bigwigs get out their worst-case scenario handbooks and look up Car Talk whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.